developers in a product organization or something, it's a bit how it's organized, but they're mostly focused on getting release features out. Basically being a bit of a feature factory, and move high pressure also from the top management because they want to have that fancy feature that they have been promised. But they only assume that it's going to work and deliver them their bonuses, etc. A bit of maybe a bit put negative, but I think people can relate to that. At some point, we have also that kind of pressure also within you have the really important project thing that everyone has. There's always a really important project that everyone has to work on. And then, if you have experiments that were not related to that, good luck with that and getting that prioritized.
Welcome to the Experiment Nation podcast. I'm your host, Charlotte Bumford. We're going to chat with Lucas Boss. Thank you for joining us today, Lucas. And he's currently working as a senior conversion specialist for RTL Netherlands. Am I correct, Lucas?
Yeah, that's correct. Almost for 4 years now. For this major broadcaster, for those who don't know RTL Netherlands. Getting back to the introduction, I work for RTL Netherlands for 4 years now as a senior CRO specialist. So we have, besides also the TV broadcasting channels that we have, RTL 4, RTL 5, RTL 7, and so on. We have also a streaming platform, Videoland, which is pretty much competing with Netflix as the number one in the Netherlands. I think Netflix is everywhere, maybe the number one. And we're second. So
it's amazing.
Competing with the Disney and HBO Max, and that's weird, at least over here. The streaming platform is called Videoland. If you have heard of it, some of the listeners might be. As a conversion specialist, I focus mainly on the Videoland platform because that's a major digital product, of course, the onboarding, like getting new customers in, but also the customer experience on the platform itself. And also outside of it, we're starting up with a bit of things for our weather platform, Buienradar, it's called. It's a major weather app. And for those who know a bit of the Netherlands, you can have all four seasons in one day. So you really want to have a weather app to check when the rain is falling down. So that's also very good to know. That's a bit.
That's amazing. Thanks for that introduction. That's a good introduction, Lucas. So what we're going to discuss today is about certain myths regarding experimentation that sometimes block or show resistance towards process. I'm actually really interested with what you're going to say, Lucas. But before we delve into the nitty-gritty of things, I would want to know more about yourself and your journey into becoming, going into the CRO world.
Ooh, can be a bit of a long journey. When to start? Maybe good to know. I've now 11, 12 years of working experience. When I graduated from university, the University of Twente, from the east of the Netherlands, in marketing communication. When I started with a large energy company here as a trainee, already experienced that wasn't that kind of my company somehow. But a digital environment, like setting up web shops, which I already did during my time at university with some friends, just try to sell stuff. That triggered me always. I thought, hey, let's continue with that. So first, then I became an SEO consultant for 1.5-2 years for a consulting company here in the Netherlands. Which gave me a bit of the opportunity because then I run into a vacancy within the media industry. NRC, that's a major quality newspaper over here. I think it's maybe comparable to a Dutch sized New York Times or a bit of The Guardian in the UK. they were searching for an online marketer who basically could manage the whole thing. So all for the whole of acquisition of subscribers to manage all the channels that they are.
Oh, wow.
And meanwhile, they were also switching, and that's a very important to, for me, the major step to get into CRO is that we're also switching from a very separate model, like they have the newspaper really on paper back in those days, that's 8 years ago, and a separate website, which was run by a very small proportion of the editorial department. You think of 250 editorial editors, and only five were mainly discussing the online things, and the rest was all only focused on the newspaper. And that's 245 others. And they had already the plan to switch that to more a story first, and then choose a channel to bring your story to life. Like, hey, do you want to have it on newspaper, or do you want to bring it online? That's the major transformation that they were starting. And one of the things was also creating a website which had a paywall. So a subscriber site which has not too much traffic got a major boost in traffic because we were introducing one of the first paywalls in the Netherlands. So, okay, bang, you had a paywall, and then you have to start optimizing that.
Yeah, that's true.
And, and that's where it all became for me. So basically, we had a background on that paywall, and the first A-B test that I did is just to remove the background, so which might not so too much HTML skills. I just removed it out of the one and put my first A-B test live with the help of, and there was also a bit of coincidence back in those days. Our office of NSC was situated one floor below the European head office of Optimizely.
Oh, no.
The European, I mean, or it was at least a Dutch one, but so I could take the elevator to when I got some questions. So it was really nice to do so when I got into something like that. And that's where it also started. So that was my very first one. I think it was 8 years ago. And
so did you guys like choose Optimizely as your A-B testing platform back then too, or?
We had it running all even before I got there, but it was not used. So you have, think of like having a bit of an expensive car in the garage and not people not knowing that there is any.
Oh, wow. So they didn't know that Optimizely was just running in the background.
Yeah. So it was running in the background, and we said, okay, hey, let's use it. And I've sometimes felt like a bit of like Alice in Wonderland. So I think, oh, hey, wow, this is great. This is great. Let's do that. And let's try. And before I noticed it, I think I was already on 10 to 15 A-B tests. And then we got a bit of traction, like, hey, we know a bit what kind of worked. Very limited, though. But we, so yeah, that's where I started my CRO journey, and that's I think 8 years ago in media industry. And after 3 years, I thought, okay, hey, I was done there. Like, okay, I like the company, I like the people, but it was not much of a challenge for me at some point. So I moved on for a startup. That wasn't my fit, wasn't a direct fit. Can happen. And then RTL came along, and it was really, I think almost a year before COVID hit, and that's a major one in streaming from the past years. It was the thing that I looked for, like, hey, the large numbers that you can have to test with and really to ramp up an experimentation program. Because, also good to know, when I started almost 4 years ago, it was done by an agency who was in one day a week. I think 90% of the people didn't know who those guys were. They were just setting up an A-B test, releasing it, and went home. And then after 2 weeks, you saw them again. They're like, hey, we have done this A-B test, and this is what it did. And people thought, okay, nice. It's show the lift or not. Okay. And moved on with the work. So it was no embedment of the culture or something. So I was more or less the first full-time CRO specialist within RTL. And yeah, I thought, okay, hey, there's lots of potential over here, so let's start ramping up and put down the gas pedal. And then, yeah, it was a nice roller coaster ride until now, because now we're like above 100 experiments a year.
Wow.
So, and also not only running, because then back in those days, we were only running on certain kind of pages, which were only meant for getting subscribers in. And now we're also running experiments to optimize the discover journey. The discover journey of finding new content. That's a major thing. Like, hey, I think everyone knows who has a streaming subscription somehow, that you wander down a catalog for 30 minutes and then you think, I don't know, I still don't know what to choose, and now I have too little time left to really watch something, so I close it again.
That sounds like me a little bit. That's what I do sometimes too.
Yeah, and I think it's very relatable for a lot of people, because we see it. We see it also, and it's also hard, because how do you? What's the perfect mix? And that's where we have started. I think a few months ago, like really got into that kind of journey. And also, a thing that we also do is trying to optimize for ad loads. That's a thing that we have done it a bit in the past, and after replatforming, got paused a bit. But now we're back into it, and really finding the perfect balance because we have also a subscription model that is a bit hybrid. So you pay a small proportion of a subscription fee, and you get some ads also on top of it. But yeah, it's a bit like you see ads, so you get a bit of discount to your normal subscription fee.
Think of it I kind of like your passion about the job that you're in and the company. I can tell that you're really passionate about it. Yeah. Okay, so I think like I've actually am interested in the things that you're going to say about the myths that you're about to bust, you know. Do you want to share the first one and then expand into it?
Let's talk about maybe first the myths that we have encountered during the past years. One of them is the myth that experimentation is dangerous for the technical stability of your platform. And the other one is that running experiments is a lot of additional work we don't have time for. And another one is also running experiments is like only finding confirmation for the obvious things. And I think maybe let's maybe limit it to us three, because you can think maybe of
lots of other ones.
Those myths that can be there in your organization that people really think that is that's the truth, and that could hinder your progress in getting your experimentation velocity going, or that you can get going into optimizing new things. Let's get cut it down to the first one, the dangerous part. That myth was pretty persistent, I think, for maybe 1.5-2 years. And I have to admit in that area that I have that I was guilty also of it with causing it. One of the experiments that we wanted to launch was just basically technically connecting two kind of products. Like, okay, hey, we want to move over a certain piece of data that you put in and then move it over to that. But it broke a bit of, like, it broke the whole onboarding flow. So people weren't able to subscribe. Tiny detail is that that experiment was running during one of the peak moments of subscriptions in, and so I got a very angry call during a Friday night, like, hey, why are we running an A/B test on this very moment? The whole thing of the whole onboarding is now broken. Hey, you have caused it. yeah, exploitation is dangerous. But he was angry, and it was kind of whole thing, and also kind of a bunch of developers were already, I think, for 30 minutes looking for kind of a cause
the reason,
why the
yeah.
onboarding was broken. And their solution, the temporary solution for a Friday night, because they wanted to drink their beers or something, was to basically remove the whole testing solutions hard out of it. So really doing it like a bit doing an open heart surgery and getting the heart out. That felt like me. So it's out, and then we stitch it back together, and then the onboarding still works, and good luck with your testing solution. It's now removed.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, and we move on. So that was a bit of the cause. And that thing persisted, like, hey, you have one time caused a breakdown of those subscriptions. So it must be very dangerous to run experiments, because otherwise it won't happen. Yeah, it was a bit of a lack of checks before we want to launch a very single experiment, a specific one. But it was extrapolated to all kind of experiments, that it's always, always almost dangerous. And yeah, that's a bit of that the situation, that the myth was there, and that was it still was there for quite a long time. We showed a lot of other experiments when we got the solution back in, and then but still, when someone, when a big title was announced, hey, yeah, we're gonna launch a big title on that date, and don't run experiments on the date. Yeah, and if you have that 5 or 6 times a year, then yeah, it's gonna hinder you.
The thing is that happens, you know, like there, even if you go through the list of checks, there are things that you won't see, or you won't be able to predict. And then something happens. So really, just basing, saying that the experiments can be dangerous because of one thing, and then generalizing it. Yeah, that's a bit of
it. It was really generalized. So how do we tackle that? Because it was hindering. And people didn't want to have
that's
experiments
a good
running
question.
On certain dates, et cetera, blah. So, I got into some conversations with some developers. We got also another thing going on, and it was outside of our influence. So it just happened that it's sometimes something, your lightning can strike. And then we had a very serious hacker attempt on all of our systems for RTL Netherlands. And also we had some servers running also in our side. There was a bit of the danger in that area, so we had to also rethink of some kind of procedures to make something more safe. And then also the exploitation solution came along, and then in that process I got into more contact with the developers, and it basically came down that there were two things happening. Basically, they didn't know of the too much details about the architecture of the testing solution. It was a bit of outside of their scope. They have some systems that they knew everything of, or it was at least someone, a technical guy, right? most of them are guys, who knew everything. So they were trusting, okay, we know that he knows everything, so it should be good. But that wasn't what they for their feeling, what they could say about the solution that we have. And one other thing was also all releases were done through a certain kind of releasing a procedure, and the A/B testing was not done in that procedure. The very first one that some key developers, the very vocal ones, were involved in rethinking and reinstalling a bit of also our testing solution that needed to be done because of that hacker attempt, or because we had to make it more safe. And another thing was also like really more showing what we do, and also sometimes do a code check with more internal people, because most of the experiments that we run, especially in the first days, were developed by external people, so there was also a bit of a challenge there. So it was really getting into more contact with some key developers and talk about them and listen to their feelings about it, because yeah, sometimes it can grow like that. So that was a bit of the whole thing. And then afterwards, I have to be honest, not all the developers are really fan of it, but yeah, it's like, okay, yeah, no, they're indifferent sometimes. So it's better than being hostile.
Yeah,
sometimes they were really hostile towards A/B testing because it's dangerous, it's not according to the processes, etc.
Or it's different from things, and they have to do more things. Like adding to their workload sometimes, but it's fine.
Exactly that. So that was a bit of the one of the first myths we had to bust, and then afterwards, it's got more stable and also more trustworthy. Not every time that people are saying, "Hey, no, don't run tests," like, "Hey, what are you going to plan for running tests?" They're always asking certain kind of tense schedules, like, "Hey, we're going to do some major titles or something." But now it's more like, okay, you know what you're doing, and okay, it's more trusted, so that's cool.
Yeah, let's move on to the next one. That's very interesting, and I actually relate to that in a bit, because I've done agency work before, and then now I'm in house. So there are some companies back then who would be like, I'm not sure if we should run A/B testing during the times that there's promotions, because they would think that the promotions, the A/B testing would hinder them from getting more, when it's actually, to be honest, the best time to run A/B testing because there's more traffic. Interested to see what you're going to say next.
Maybe to jump in on that. It's a bit like sometimes you have to maybe step down a bit, because I think sometimes if you really have a peak, that's going to also screw you the results. Like,
that's
if you do it on peak the season, that's going to have maybe different behavior. It's balancing also. It's a balancing act.
I agree. That's actually a good point. Yeah.
Experimentation is regarded as having extra work. So, and I think a lot of people can relate to the thing that the developers and the product organization or something, it's a bit how it's organized, but they're mostly focused on getting release features out. Basically being a bit of a feature factory. And move high pressure also from the top management, because they want to have that fancy feature that they have been promised. Only assume that it's going to work and deliver them their bonuses, etc. A bit of maybe a bit put negative, but I think people can relate to that. At some point, we have also that kind of pressure also within you have the really important project thing that everyone has. There's always a really important project that everyone has to work on. And then, if you have experiments that were not related to that, good luck with that, getting prioritized. But what we did, and especially during the last, I think, 12 to 18 months, is to get more into the really important projects, like, hey, you want to do that, so sounds great, but maybe we have to validate more. And we got more about we did there two things. One is to basically say, like, hey, it's not about experimentation, it's about validation. So you want to validate if you do the right things. You can validate with a pre-experiment, like, hey, getting some mockups out, say, use tools like Usability Hub, and then already say, hey, this kind of design could work out the best. And then afterwards also do the final validation in an A/B test, and also, and do some pre-A/B testing. So get key components. Okay, hey, you want to do this, then you also think of, hey, that we should do this. Maybe we should prepare that and set it and creating space. Like, hey, if you want to on always on a mobile, you don't have to do that much space, and everyone wants to be there with buttons, etc. So yeah, sometimes you need to create space over there. And what we did is basically first run an experiment to create that space, like just remove stuff. So can you create the space that's necessary or not?
Mm-hmm.
And then present those results, and then you got some from buying. Okay, hey, you're contributing to the really important project, and that's where you show also the added value, and not having too much in the myth. Okay, it's not extra work. Oh no, you can really contribute on the important things we think it's important to do so.
That's really interesting. So do you do like pre-testing first and then do the actual like big testing kind of thing?
Mostly both. And we now also in a one, and then we did first some pre-validation with some designs in a usability hub study, and then we have also done the make space experiment. We've done a run it as well, and now I think one of the first after launch experiments is running. So okay, hey, do the assumptions that checking the final assumptions were of key assumptions that there were there for the project. So before we got into, hey, after 1 month or 1.5 months, that people think, okay, hey, now the results are really more negative than I thought it was, and then people, yeah, try to do big changes to kind of designs because it's not what we're doing, and then people are really focused on getting those kind of results.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Testing usually it is kind of like a sequence too, though. Like it depends on, like, you start with something that starts the whole sequence of tests, which is really interesting. Yeah. when you. So let's, is that your second one or your third one?
There was a second one, the additional work.
How would you tackle that if in case, like, for example, because, you know, I've been to companies as well where, like, oh, the A-B testing, the results are really, really good, but it will take a while before it becomes a permanent change because we have, like you said, like, we have to launch these features. How can you, how can you tell the developers to prioritize it to be as a permanent change ASAP to get the benefits?
Basically, we have now for one of the major flows we have with one of the product or the deal that every sprint we do at least one implementation if there is any. He creates a bit of space, and most of them are pretty small. So, sometimes so developers need to work on a really important project, and it's also really big stories. And sometimes they really want to do, they're not into the mood for that, so they want to do something else, which is also sometimes good. That you have also sometimes these days, okay, I don't know, I'm not going to do something else, which also lies already a long time over there, and which is pretty small, so I can feel a bit of satisfied that I've done that, because then I have finished at least some job. And we try to create that kind of stories for that.
Yeah. Oh, I think one of the things that I try to, like, because I had like a few conversations about permanent changes, and then, you know, that back and forth within myself and the developer, the first thing I say is that, you know, like, if we let it, because what I do is if in case it wins, I put it up as a permanent change in Google Optimize. As soon as I wait for the developer to be free to make it a permanent change,
mm-hmm.
you know. And so the problem with that, this is something that I tell the developers, because they do ask me all the time, like, well, we can let it live in Google Optimize until we're ready and stuff. And I tell them, like, look, it's good, but if we have, like, let's say 5 or 10 personalizations, then there's a lot of problems that would arise. Most likely, the website will be slowed. There will be a lot of, like, scripts that will be popping up. And, I kind of, like, try to say that in that way, just to get one of my permanent changes in. Yeah, I'm not sure how you do it, Lucas, but I'm pretty sure you had that conversation as well.
Not in that sense, because we don't do 100% things.
Yeah.
Not at all. We don't do that. And for a few reasons. One of them is the technical stuff. I talked about experimentation being regarded as a bit hacky as such. For us, it means if we do that, then we get a perception already in. And it's also, I think, it can really break down some things. I've heard quite a lot of stories that people, that change was there for ages because it was for ages or at 100% in Google Optimize, DWO, etc.
Yeah.
You don't want to have that. It's also terrible for loading speed, etc. And lots of other stuff. So what we basically say is like, hey, you're losing money not to implement this.
Exactly.
We're not going to do
that
within our testing tool because you don't want me to create your technical debt. You don't want that because that's basically what you do. And technical debt is also the last one in line because we have to do that. We have to refactor that, but yeah, we need to also do that. It's a really important project feature. And the maintenance of your code is being deprioritized again and again.
Yes.
And I strongly believe if you do that 100% in the current implementations, I think you have the risk that you end up being regarded as only technical dev solutions. Oh yeah, we have to do that because it's already there 100%, so it's doing the job already. So okay. And we try to stay away from that. So okay, hey, if you implement that, it's not running now because we just put we have switched off the test. We're just not running new ones. Only let us know when you're gonna work on that because it might screw up a currently running test. But then you implement a winner and then you see the uplift, and that's also that's creating more pressure to for the implementation phase.
Yeah, exactly.
Full release.
That's a good one. What's the third one, Lucas? What's the third?
I talked about the extra work. I talked about the dangerous part, and I talked about the experimentation being regarded as scant and obvious. Also from the development side, sometimes people think, when you present results and you show a winner, then they say, yeah, that's obvious. Hey, why are we testing this? Everyone could think of that.
I've heard that before.
A lot of people can relate to that. It's always someone who's raising it. And still some people think that it's not that.
I agree with you.
Don't think of dear listeners, don't think that every myth is totally busted on our side. We have reduced it, and it's also like reducing it at some point that is not a common myth, like a common paradigm in your company, but more or less minorities that think of it like that, and to be a bit realistic in that sense. Back to the obvious things, like sometimes people think that, and what we did, I think, for the last 2 years, try to show people that also we are sometimes are really wrong in our assumptions. So we try to play around with the expectations, like when we present results, and we have a month almost every month we can present the results in a big product meeting where a lot of developers are in, product owners, etc. And then we pick some experiments and always try to pick the unexpected ones. So
unexpected,
we prioritize so obvious things, sure, but they're not getting that attention. But if you can surprise the audience, like, okay, hey, yeah, you we follow we all thought of that this could work, right? Yeah. Why not?
It did. Yeah, I just, know
and
what
then
you mean.
Also leave. Yeah, and then like, oh, who? Why that? And then people, yeah, start asking questions. Why is that? And if you do that, quite repeat that kind of things, like, and then say, hey, people, yeah, we also know that we are also right, 25-30% of the time. And then, that's a common thing. Zero people know, but outside of our profession, it's not that known yet. But we try to educate people for that. We as well were wrong. So, okay, hey,
yeah,
we were wrong.
I agree with you.
La, 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 and then, oh.
Oh, it didn't work.
It didn't work. It was not any results or even negative. I really liked that when you expect positive, that you have negative. And also, let's really also, it also showed the negative results, like, hey,
something we can learn from.
This to check this. We see that it was negative, so we have averted the loss. We talked not to have a lot of losses because that's a pretty negative thing, but loss aversion thing. And then people say, oh yeah, that's cool that we did test that, and then we didn't move on to that, because at some point in the getting people getting that myth buzzed that you only test the obvious, that's showing the negative and the unexpected results have so much more influence on that than just having a winner show, let's put it that way. And it's nice to show winners sometimes, and you have to do that as well. But if you only show winners, then it's then I think not that powerful, and at least from our experience, not that powerful if you show really it can be. Either way, and also
that's
social inconclusive ones.
Exactly.
Like, hey, we have worked quite a lot of time on this, and yeah, no effect. So maybe we have to stop and that's thinking that sense and think of other things.
Exactly. I think, like, especially if it's a high impact or high effort type of, it's kind of like, oh, you know, it's an obvious fix, quote unquote, and then it's high effort at the same time. If we didn't A/B test that, then that's a lot of like time wasted, money wasted. If that was just moved into the permanent change fix, you know what I mean? So, yeah, definitely. I've heard those comments before. How have you guys tackled that conversation? So, if someone tells you, Lucas, this is an obvious fix, what are you gonna say?
I start asking questions, and that's also what I've learned to do, is just ask questions. Okay, why is it obvious? Okay, why do you think it's obvious? So it can be obvious. It sounds somewhat logical, but I just want to know more background. What do they have of evidence? So if they don't have evidence, everyone does it, right? Yeah, but.
Sometimes the best practice from another company doesn't apply to you as well, you know what I mean? So it is different from every other industry. They have their own best practices for a reason, but doesn't mean that it applies to the problems that you're trying to solve in your own company.
Yeah, exactly that. And it's also a bit like picking your battles in that sense. And sometimes you really think, okay, hey, there's also a bit of when everyone knows, okay, hey, it's really an obvious thing, like, okay, let's move on.
I agree.
If it's something like you say, there could be a chance that we are wrong in this, and that could be then I say, hey, do you want to have the risk that it's unexpectedly showing worse numbers than before?
Probably a good question.
It's about risk.
Yeah. Probably a good question is, what is the definition of the obvious fix? How would you define obvious fix?
That's, I think, a very good one. I think there's not really, yeah, what is really obvious? I think bug fixes are obvious fixes. Like for people have showing errors, buttons not working, etc. Outside of it, okay, if you really have like bug fixes or things that show like it's not working, but it's still working, but yeah, you it's not showing anything, like hey, a bit of a like a hidden button, or people don't know where to click, those kind of things. I think it's got pretty obvious. Outside of it, I would be very hesitant to call things obvious, because I've seen also some things that people, yeah, that's obvious, okay, but let's do an experiment, I think, let's see, and if it's obvious, then yeah, really move on. And you also said, hey, you have the evidence that it's obvious, so that when someone asks questions and yeah, don't think it's obvious, you have the evidence, and you don't want, and what I was saying is, I would try to also say something about a risk appetite. Okay. Hey, do you want to have the risk that you're pushed for towards your opinion? They're pretty obvious and could be, but it shouldn't, or it can be that it's not. Do you want to have the risk that it's not? And most of them think, okay, hey, maybe it's good to check. And also most things are pretty easy to test, and then if you prioritize it a bit also on the testing backlog, like hey, when we move on also to do that for pretty often, pretty quickly, then you get also the buy-in from those people. Okay, hey, I think that now people come to me, I think it's obvious, let's test it, or test at least parts of it, and then yeah, and then move on. Can you put it into the schedule? Like, okay, very good that you come to us. And also now we have like people saying to one another that okay, no, it's obvious. Or I'm not 100% sure. Then let's test it. And then they come to us like, okay, hey guys, we had a bit of a discussion. Not everyone was agreeing on having it. It's like obvious, so it should be there. So. That's the thing of
I think I think there are CRO specialists who would relate to companies as well, who are saying, oh, that's an obvious fix. How would you, like, you know, you're very very experienced, how would you or what is your advice to CRO specialists or CRO managers that's an agency and companies are saying like, oh, that's an obvious fix, let's not test that?
At some point, if you have the opportunity and the ability to be a bit bold and test the obvious thing still, like just try to set it up, especially if it's pretty easy or something. And if you And also use also your own experience, like hey, if you may be in doubt about for you it's obvious, but for me it really isn't, when it's that much off balance, try to pick something that you think, okay, hey, this might be the opportunity to do that. And if if you are wrong, it was obvious, and then it's like, hey, I've tested it, and go back after that. I still tested it. You were right. I was wrong. But most of the times, you also think something. Hey, I've seen something unexpected. That's maybe a side effect or something. Oh, okay. Hey, that's the thing. Yeah, that's why we do something like that.
Yeah.
So it's always. But sometimes you really have to show. You have to have that breakthrough, because. I've also seen quite a lot of internal discussions here that's going back and forth, and it's only opinions. You only can move on if you have put additional evidence onto the table. Then you can move on to a next stage, at least, of the discussion. And it's not too many times that it's fully done, but at least you get into the next stage, and then people are not discussing all of it anymore, but maybe certain aspects. So you have make progress. So it's also a bit of how you can approach it.
Yeah, that's good advice. That's really good advice. Do you want to conclude? Like, what's our conclusion on this one, Lucas?
I think you have heard freemiths, and I think maybe for the people listening, they have other myths, like a really persistent myth that's hindering them, that's holding them back to make progress. I think one of the red lines between like, hey, try to get in to get into the things like, hey, what's causing it, where it's coming from, who, that's a bit of the whole thing, where it's coming from. So, and then discuss it. It's like, really ask questions. Okay, hey, why do you think that, or hey, where it's coming from. Try to explore that, and then afterwards, then you can also see, find common ground most of the times. Like, okay, hey, okay, let's do that. And also, for most, it can be a pitfall for most CRO specialists to only show the focus on winners and show only on hey, let's only on the positive things. Like, really think of hey, that you're not testing because it's obviously no, you're testing because you wanna not do the things that are not having effect or even negative effect, and show that also to people, because that's that for I hope for everyone that they have also the space and the environment that they can show, okay, hey people, that's it's not what we have expected it, and it was not intended, but we still find a result that we're not happy with, but at least we learned. And that it can be a bit of the just get outside of only showing winners and having an array festival, but more of a thing of okay, hey, show learnings, show the added value, educate, and more in that sense.
That's a really good conclusion. Should companies be afraid of CRO?
No, not at all. I think I don't know if you know Tom Westling. Maybe some of the listeners do. I think so. And he says sometimes a CRO is not about showing fancy tricks on websites, and then you're boosting conversion with extraordinary numbers. No, it's not. It's about we are in the area of decision making, he says.
I agree.
It's about risk management. So we're reducing risk. And I think senior managers are although they do not know, but they really need us to reduce the risks in their decision making. And we can help them with that. And if you are in that sense, then I think in that area you are seen also a bit in that way, then I think you have made some major steps.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Lucas, for your time today. And we're so glad to have you in Experiment Nation.